Welcome to the Kawartha Small Business Podcast, where we believe the Kawarthas can be the most thriving region in Canada for small businesses. So we created a podcast where we have million-dollar conversations that help small business owners thrive. I'm Brian Rump from Profit Coach.
And I'm Matt Garrity from Matagy Digital.
And we are recording from the Thrive Podcast Studio at Thrive Coworking Community in downtown Lindsay, Ontario at 18 Kent Street West. And our guest today is Jess Spagnolo. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, you did.
Awesome. I practiced it and everything right before. And Jess is a regular at our Monday morning coffees. And we thought it would be great to have a conversation with you because you have moved to the Kawarthas. You're finishing up some schooling. You are an artist and you have some, I think, really good ideas and perspective, and you're moving into your own business, and you're kind of the perfect candidate to be on the Small Business Podcast. So tell us a bit more about you and sort of what is igniting your creativity these days.
Well, I moved up from Toronto back in 2019 when I got married. So it was a huge change coming into a small town. I was heavily involved in just nightlife in Toronto, and I did a lot of live music there. And so that was a pretty big change coming into small town that everything closed at 5 o'clock. So I think throughout the pandemic, everyone's kind of struggled with figuring out what to do. And, even just for me being a little like isolated out here. So Thrive has been such a cool space to connect, being out here, and also have meet like-minded individuals that also care about what goes on after 5 p.m. in such a small town. So it's been nice, kind of. I'm really inspired to kind of bring that nightlife, Toronto nightlife essence into Lindsay as it's expanding and growing and more people from the city are coming in. So we kind of I'd like to have something for them to kind of get involved or just enjoy or whatever.
You're going to be the nightlife expert.
Yeah.
This is like a whole new business idea. Yeah. It's not a bad one.
Just no dingy stuff. It's going to be cool and artsy.
What kind of stuff do you wish was up here after 5 o'clock?
Well, for sure, some music venues would be nice. I was so used to just having going to spaces where they were just DJs, and like it wasn't even an event. It was just some music playing while you're having some drinks or something or eating, and it was just like after 9 o'clock, it becomes like a, I don't know, not like a dance thing, but it becomes very free. I don't know, but it was like that kind of stuff, or even open mics. I had a lot of experience doing or being involved with open mics, it's kind of stuff like that, or even just like showcases and just things to kind of get creatives involved. And it doesn't have to be music and art, but it can be like other things. And I don't know.
Does that stuff not happen up here? Or like, I've got a feeling some of the stuff happens, but it's a marketing problem.
I think like my perspective, and it's, you know, Lindsay's different. Like when I think of like Peterborough, like I went to university in Peterborough, and what I learned early on is there's something for everyone in Peterborough, but you have to find it. And it's all a series of small things. Like, I don't know what it's like now. I think it's similar. You could find live music almost every night, but you have to like find it and know where it is. And you're never showing up with like 500 people at something. And I think if we look at the Kawarthas, it's so fragmented, and there's so many people who have the same problem, and it's like, well, how do we get everyone together then to like solve it and like enjoy the creative things? And then you always find out about little pockets of things happening, but it is, I think, sort of a marketing problem, but also just you need people who are willing to put in the work to organize it and do it.
That's true.
It's so few and far in between. Like, I'm thinking of live music. I think it would be really challenging to find live music in Lindsay every night of the week. Yeah. I could think Olympia, like they do their jazz night. That's
every times a year,
or like every other week, I think in the spring and summer. But yeah, there's nowhere you just go, like you said, where there's open mic.
I only know this is a good conversation. So in Fenland Falls, Sweet Bottoms used to have like a jam night every Friday, and you would like drive by and it would be packed, and there would be people like up the stairs in the place. But that doesn't, like they sold and now it's a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think pre-COVID they had moved, there was like a church there that was doing something. So it's these pockets, but in Lindsay, like I can't even tell you the last time I could go see like a live band at like a restaurant, even like that used to be a thing, but now it just doesn't really happen. And I think it could happen because I would like to go, but even marketing wise, sometimes there are things and I see them like from people who are at the event, they like post like on Instagram, and I was like, oh, I wish I knew that that event existed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to an 80s dance like 2 weekends ago. It was sold out. I had no idea it existed. Someone just like, hey, you want to go to this? I thought I was seeing a band up until like days before, but it had sold out like months ahead of time, too.
Is that the one at the...
The Legion.
But yeah, someone else just mentioned it. I was like, I had no idea.
Yeah, I had no idea either. I saw your picture online, and I'm like a little bit jealous that I didn't know that existed.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was so much fun. I felt young again. I was kind of cranky about it, like leading up. I was like, I don't want to go out and like do this thing. And then the day I was like, you can just go out and have fun. Like, you can be that person. And it was awesome. Like, it felt like going out back in the day. But also now everyone is an adult and there's like no drama.
Yeah.
Or like there's not people trying to be
gone by 10.
Yeah, we left at 11:30, which is really late for us. But it was like no one's being creepy, like no one's like trying to start fights with anybody. It was just everyone was there having a blast. And that to me was like, this needs to happen more.
Yeah.
But that was one guy that rented out the space, took a risk, got a DJ, probably paid the DJ, I don't know, I'm assuming all these things, but then like sold tickets for it and promoted it and all this stuff. And like, we need more people like that, you also, like the After Five nightclub expert, Jess. I'm sorry about the name now. We need more of that around here, I do think. And like, it's funny because like we've had Lewis on this podcast, friend of the show, friend of us personally. He talks about this all the time, but like he's got a bajillion things going on. Everybody's like wants this, but like we need you to do this. Actually, we need someone like to grab the bull by the horns and deal with it, type of thing.
Yeah.
So,
and I think commit to show that it's possible, because I do think like Lindsay. Every time I come to like the movies and I leave at night, and especially in the spring and summer, I'm like, this downtown is like really nice. Like, why can't I walk somewhere and listen to some music right now?
Yeah.
And it just doesn't exist. Whereas I think, you know, neighborhoods in Toronto, that sort of Toronto life, people might think about, you know, big giant nightclubs. But like when I think of visiting Toronto, it's like the series of small places where you can just go for a walk and like randomly go in somewhere.
Yeah.
And have like, there's like some great music going on, like you kind of get surprised by it, and it's just like a great energy, and we do need more of that.
Yeah, and there is that element of diversity in Toronto, and there's a lot more you know, musically. I remember one time walking along Ossington, and I went into a cafe that my friends and I used to we would frequent, and they had like a Brazilian music, it's like a Brazilian duo, and they were playing like a mashup of like From what I know, I'm probably going to be so wrong, but I think it was called like Jenga, and it was like this, it was just like, you couldn't help but shimmy while you're like eating. It was like, it was so cool. And then just, you know, you step out and then you walk somewhere else and it's like someone playing like Nirvana covers, which is great. That's awesome. And the biggest thing here I found was, maybe it's just, I haven't like really had or come across the diversity, especially with music, because I'm still fairly new with networking with local musicians. But a lot of the musicians that I've come to know, a lot of it's acoustic singer-songwriter set, which is great. I myself am one. But I, you know, it's always nice to have that other variety of like, whoa, I haven't heard this before. Like, whoa, that's a cool like mix of genre. Like it's just intrigues you. And even with spaces, you're right, with just like walking in somewhere. I think I remember another time also in the Ossington area. That was just like, that was a nice area in Toronto.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. We're walking through a neighborhood and someone just opened up their garage and they had like a drum kit and they just started jamming with their garage doors open and people were just bringing out chairs and just on the street, just like listening to them. And it was super cool. Just stuff like that. So then, you know, you didn't have to worry about permits because they're like in their garage. So I think that's probably the other thing. And I think Matt and I kind of had a brief conversation about like permits and stuff and like knowing what to do. And I think that's probably my biggest hurdle, or just learning about all of that and how to go about putting together events or just, you know, taking this bull by its horns without having to worry about like permits or all that stuff. Cause I don't know any of that.
Permits are tricky, but permits you only really need to worry about if you're outside. I've looked into it a little bit also here at Thrive, where I can do almost what I want, whatever I want here, until like 10, 11 o'clock at night type of thing. Like we can do music, no issue, I don't need a permit, all that type of stuff. But you're out on the streets a little bit different. But then it depends on your mentality. Like Lewis, I'll steal this kind of thought from him, which is like, just go do it, and if we get in trouble, we'll deal with it type of thing. Where he didn't like talk about old school like hip hop, like on the street, and then play your music, and then the cops come and kick you out, and scatter, and like that's it type of thing. And I'm a little bit that way too, which is like, let's just do it. And if we get in trouble, I'm going to try to talk my way out of it. I'm probably not going to get in trouble either.
I'll just say I'm not from here. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know.
Oh yeah, it's like, I know, right? Like, and I think it's one thing if you're like planning a festival and like it's gonna be in the park and you're charging, selling tickets beforehand, and like people could see those advertisements, they might be like, oh, you don't have a permit for this. But you know, permits, things like that are barriers. Yeah. But sometimes they don't exist. They're different in every town. And sometimes the best way to find out when they are is to just jump in and do something. Mm-hmm. So jump in and do it.
Yeah.
What do you, so from a business standpoint, what's sort of your dream business locally?
Locally? I'm kind of dabbling in a bunch of things. I recently, as I mentioned, got involved with the music scene. Before that, I was just, I was really just, I have my mural business, my art business, and I'm just finishing my graphic design schooling. So that's also going to be something that I'm involved with and freelancing. And so my big picture is probably just to be involved in the community as best I can in all of those aspects. And I guess just like Jill of all trades when it comes to that. Like for me, I feel rejuvenated doing all these like different things, because all of these things kind of pour into me. They're all part of my passions. And so it excites me to just be able to do a little bit of, you know, it's a different thing. I'm not, it's not like a 9-to-5. That's just not me. I just couldn't do, I've done a 9-to-5 and it drained me, but so it excites me to be able to do different things and kind of not know what to expect in terms of, you know, what we're getting involved with today or something. So that's kind of where I see myself. I'll just be everywhere, I guess. I don't know.
Do you act?
In high school I did.
Yeah.
And I can be a little dramatic sometimes. but I have acted, and my husband acts. He does like more directing, but he went to school for theater.
Oh,
wow. So it's, yeah, I have spoken to him about possibly auditioning for one of the next plays or musicals that like he's part of, depends on the musical. I have to like feel the part, I think.
Yeah. I knew you as the muralist and then realized you did art. And then a couple weeks ago, I realized you were a singer as well. And I've told you this, like I'm not just saying this, and like the music is amazing. It's wonderful and you'd like it. It's really great. And like I didn't know that you were just like literally like a true artist when Brian introduced you. Like you're not just painting stuff, like you do everything. How did you get into all that? Like
you know, I never had video games, so I like my sister and I, she's also very artistic, and she's actually out in BC studying art therapy. Both her and I, we would spend a lot of time just like coloring, and then we also we would sing in front of a fan for the effects, and then we had a camcorder, so we would like film our own really awful music videos.
Nice. That's awesome.
So that was kind of like my upbringing. And so I don't know, I think I was just, that was how we entertained ourselves. And I just enjoyed it. And that kind of just stuck with me. I think, a lot of that I found, even in high school, I was part of the Arts Advantage program when I was in Toronto. I went to a school called Downsview Secondary School, which was probably not my greatest, but we had a really great Arts Advantage program, and I was part of that. And so I basically took a bunch of extra artistic courses. Like I took drama, took additional gym classes just because I wanted. And then I had photography, art. I don't know what else we had.
You do photography too?
Sometimes. I do it from, I think I started doing it just because I had these like ideas of photographs, and I just couldn't get anyone else to take them, and I just did them myself. But I don't like take professional pictures, like I don't take portraits, or like I don't do weddings. Like I haven't done any of that. I think all of that is just like a little way out of my element. Like I took a camera with me when I went out west, and I was just playing around with the camera, and just the photographs and the scenery, all of that was like really nice. And just I think I really like that, like these artistic kind of landscape nature photography. That's like the most recent hobby I started dipping my foot in. And so I haven't even really like put it out there yet.
When did you realize or think that you're going to make a career out of being an artist?
It was probably not until the pandemic, really. Before the pandemic, I was working out of Whitby. In an office, and I did get laid off, and it was really only during the 8 months that I was on EI that I was like, oh, what can I do with this time? Now is the opportunity that I have. This is the prime time for me to experiment with something new or something that I always thought of. And when I was in Toronto before I moved to Lindsay, I was actually working for a mural business based out of the GTA. And that kind of working under her, the owner, just seeing that she made this her full-time thing although she was also married and her husband also worked full time, she made a business out of that. And so that was something that was always kind of in the back of my head. So then when the pandemic hit and I thought, maybe I can start my own. And so I did. And it was very slow to start, just because, you know, dealing with the lockdown and mm-hmm. I can't really go into people's homes or whatever the restriction was, that kind of had it caused for it to be a lot slower. But I think more recently it's picked up, and then just with the connections that I've made with some of the local organizations or just businesses that I've been able to do murals for, it's kind of, I feel like I've gotten my foot more in the door with when it comes to getting myself out there. So I think, and even now I'm still like, am I even doing this? What am I doing? We were talking about imposter syndrome. So I just felt like sometimes I'm like, people are emailing me. Why are they emailing me? But it's still, yeah, it's still something I deal with. I'm like, am I really doing this? What if I fail? Like, I don't know what's going on. But it was really through the pandemic that I just kind of took the jump. I was like, okay, I'm just going to do it. Yeah. It's okay. If I fail, I'll just work at McDonald's. It's fine.
I vividly remember having thoughts, like imposter syndrome thoughts, while taking my dog out on the back deck, so stressed. Brian's probably heard this story 100 times, but like, I actually thought to myself I was going to go to jail and get arrested because people were giving me money to do marketing and I don't know what I'm doing. And I was like, this is illegal. This is fraud. And then my head started spinning that way. So it's a very normal. And then I started to learn about imposter syndrome and realize, oh, this is a very real thing. Like, this is, we're not alone in that regard. So
yeah,
it's very real. I think everyone goes through it a little bit. Like, is this real? And then I think part of it is going through that and realizing that you do have something to offer people. And it's like, yeah, they mm-hmm. do want that. Because I think, you know, if we can zero in on the muralist stuff for a while, like, people see a mural, they love it. I think a lot of people would like a mural, but like, it's not like very many people are out selling them, or like, I wouldn't even know how to get a mural. So it's like, mm-hmm. you know, if you can be the person that helps people get that, like, I think there's demand for it. There's just all these like, how do I get it? How much does it cost? What does it look like? Type of thing. And it's a nice niche where you can make, you know, walls look amazing or anything. So, you know, tell us a little bit about, yeah, murals. Like, who gets a mural? How do they get a mural? How do they pay you to do a mural?
Yeah, murals. I love how different every single mural that I've done has been. And it's just so fun because they're never something that I would ever think to do. So usually I have had my fair, a little time or, you know, season where I kind of just did cold emailing and I was just like, I'm local, I'm new from the city, I'm looking for walls to paint. And if you're listening to this, you probably have seen my Facebook marketplace post, because I've like posted it there. Or if you're a local business, I may have reached out to you in the past. And so I've just put that out there. And I've had a few people respond to that, and I've been able to get a couple murals that way. Mm-hmm. And then I think more recently, it's been more so word of mouth, just from relationships that I've cultivated so far. And that's been a big thing too, just the relationship building. I know it's not easy for everyone, that aspect of just like networking. For me, it's as an extrovert, that's kind of, maybe I'm just kind of everything that like, as an extrovert during the pandemic, I couldn't see anyone. I couldn't talk to anyone. Mm-hmm. So I was very recluse and I didn't want that. And so now it's just kind of like, hello, I'm Jess. Who are you? And so I'm just really excited meeting people. And then especially when there's that similar, similar likes and there's just a lot of things in common, that makes it even more exciting. And so with, when it comes to murals, sometimes people know what they want and then other times they don't. I usually try to offer ideas. I will ask a ton of questions just to try to gauge what their vision is. Even if they don't have a vision, I try to, there's always somewhere even though you don't know what you want, you know what you want. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So then, I personally just give free estimates just based on, dimensions, measurements, and detailing, how detailed the design is. And then I usually go from there and, murals for me, I think on average, they take about 2 to 3 days, anywhere between 1 day to 3 days to complete, depending on how big it is. And I don't know. It's been really fun. And sometimes I also don't know what I'm doing, but I also know what I'm doing.
Well, I think that's art though, right? Like the magic that happens, like you don't just create it. Like it's a process, and that's where you're trusting the artist to do their thing and see where it goes. And sometimes magic happens.
Yeah.
Tell me, so when I think mural, you talk about dimensions. As we get into this, I'm thinking beyond the big mural on the outside wall. Do you do indoor, outdoor? What's the smallest sort of space you need for what a mural would be?
I have done both. I mostly work indoor. I do a lot of indoor murals. I have done exterior murals. Those are usually dependent on weather, of course. I'm kind of at the mercy of the sun or rain or whatever the temperature is that day. But I have done both. I prefer indoor because the wall is not the same as an exterior wall. Mm. It's so much smoother. And I'm trying to think of the smallest space I've done. I've probably done, so at my mom's house, there's a powder room, like a really tiny washroom that used to be a closet, and my dad converted it into a tiny bathroom many, many years ago. And so it's literally I don't even think it's a full 2 feet, in width. Okay. And so you just sit down, you can basically wash your hands while you're sitting on the toilet. And I painted the wall behind just above the toilet. So as you're sitting, I'm just giving you a tour of my mom's bathroom. You're sitting, you're looking at the mirror, and the mirror, you can see the wall behind you. So it's just a 2x3. That's probably been the smallest mural I've done so far. But I mean, I also work on canvas. So I've done really tiny, tiny paintings. But then I've also done large scale, probably the largest ones that I've done were when I was in Toronto. I was working for the company. We did an indoor baseball field or baseball warehouse thing. I don't know, it was massive. We were just doing these audience, and we tried to make, they kind of looked like South Park characters. We were just stamping heads. It's okay. It's all about the illusion, really. You want to think, your brain thinks that there's more detail than there actually is, but that's
right.
Because that's the difference really between murals, mural art, and then just painting on a canvas. Because you could spend hours. I can spend forever getting all the details right on a mural. But it's at the end of the day, it's really about the illusion that it looks more detailed than it really is.
I've heard that about Pixar. They've said that, where a large percentage of your brain will just kind of make up what it's seeing anyways, 60 to 70%, your brain will put it together afterwards, which is probably frightening from an artist perspective.
Yeah. Well, you see all the imperfections and things that are lacking, but you just don't tell anyone.
Yeah, I think that's an artist thing where the person that's completing something sees all the issues more than everyone else. Like, I can tell you within Thrive every dent and nick and thing that I'm unhappy with, but then you have people walk through, oh, it's beautiful, it's perfect. I'm like, no, there are 112 different instances that need to be touched on here. But I was laughing when you were asking her, because like, her and I had coffee a couple of weeks ago, and I was asked, like, I would like her to do some murals at Thrive, and I felt like awkward and embarrassed to ask her if she would do the bathroom specifically, if you would want to paint a bathroom. But like, it's so stark white there, we realized like we need something in there, and then we're like, well, maybe wallpaper. Like, I've only ever heard how bad wallpaper is. I don't want to do it, but I thought that would be pretty cool to actually have like a mural.
Oh, I think, and that's, I'm glad we have this conversation, because when I think muralist, I think outdoor.
Yeah.
And then even though you talked about, oh, you've badgered everyone in town, I haven't seen one post about murals. And I just think, yeah, every business, every cafe, like I think of memorable places that have like a mural on the wall of just something, right? And like, I think it's a great business model. I didn't really know you did. Like, yeah, like the bathroom, like, I know people like that in their house. Like, it's kind of that working everyday artist type of job where you can create something unique for someone within a few days. And you know, people do feature walls. It's like, you know, you could spend thousands of dollars on tile, or you could spend thousands of dollars on a muralist, right? Like, I think it's just an alternative, like, creating that static piece of art that could be anything. Like, yeah, and even I was like, hey, this, we're in the podcast studio now. It's like, where's the podcast mural? Like, you know, it's just an idea of like an option of something that's available. Like, I think you have a unlimited potential. And I, you know, every business has a spare wall, and you might need an attraction to bring something in, or just giving you that perspective of being somewhere maybe where you're not, like, you know, that art can transport us different places.
Yeah. And I think it's also, it really means something to the individual because they played a part in the art, right? Like they came at it with their idea, or, you know, if it's something, it's so unique to them, to their wall, and to them, especially because they're like, oh, like this, like I thought of this. So, and that's special for them. And I enjoy that too. That's special for me too.
It's that story. I think from a small business standpoint, it's like, it makes the space yours. Yeah. It puts your character on the business. You know, small businesses are about, you know, community and being different. Like, you know, if we wanted a chain restaurant, we buy a franchise and run a chain restaurant, or like coffee shop or something. But, you know, what better way to stamp your own business than to have like your own mural on the wall somewhere?
But even the old chain restaurant, I remember back when we were kids, well, you're way older than me, so when you were in your teen, when I was a kid, we'd go to McDonald's and they'd have the play place, and there was the big mural with like all the McDonald's characters on.
Yeah,
like different things like that. Yeah, like the tools you can have, and like, yeah, I think, you know, things like wallpaper are coming back in a way, but I think what's coming back is like, we don't just want a solid color on the wall.
Yeah.
We want something different. And I've seen some design shows, they have like, you know, muralists sort of come in and do like a mural in the hallway as a way for it to stand out. Like, I think there's lots of potential. People just need to know that it's an option and it exists locally.
Yeah.
I'm going to frame this question maybe interestingly. The graphic design stuff that you did, I will have people come to me and like, I'm interested in social media. I think I'm going to go back to school for social media. And I say, no, don't do that. I have people that come to me and they're like, hey, I want to like start a business. I should go back to school. I say, no, don't do that. People that are interested in design, they're always like, oh, I think I should go to school for graphic design. And I always say yes, because I do think that the best graphic designers I've ever worked with actually have gone through graphic design school. Mm-hmm. I think Brian maybe disagrees with me. We spoke about this last week. But what I said to him, and I'm wondering if you agree or whatever, is you don't have to be a good graphic designer to do a website. But you have to be a good graphic designer to do a logo.
I think I would agree. Yes. I think also to do a logo, I mean, you get the early stages of logo design is usually just like pen on paper or like pencil on paper. And you're just kind of sketching out stuff. So like, you know, it doesn't always take a graphic designer to come up with it. Obviously from the graphic design, stance, you do know there are things to think of, to consider when you are designing, because you're not just seeing this image, but you're also seeing like what is, how are we going to capture the audience? Like, what is this going to mean to the clients, customers? Like, you're thinking about all these other things rather than just this cool like, little doodle. So you could take, as a graphic designer, you could take the doodle and go with it, run with it. You can do more things with it. But I think it does take it. So yes, I think that I would agree that like a graphic design, anyone can make a logo, but a graphic designer will make it into like a brand logo, like knowing what it means and where to go from there. So yeah, I would agree. Yes.
I would say not a logo, but like a good logo. Because I think, you know, from a small business standpoint, this is maybe a whole other conversation of when you invest in like branding and a proper designer. Not everyone needs to do that out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get something that like is okay and get your business going.
Mm-hmm.
But then there does come a point where I think you want to invest in that branding or hiring like an artist or a graphic designer who can ask all those questions and bring together that feel of what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think you know, I do agree generally that there's all these like design principles that, you know, a design type school helps with.
There's only so much you could do with Canva, I think.
Yeah.
And again, it's a good tool.
Yes.
Like I don't want to downplay that. And I also think sometimes people delay starting their business because they want to, the first thing they invest in is, you know, the $5,000 logo. That's probably not a good move either.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you do level up, you want to get a proper designer who's went to design school. Is logos a thing you like doing, want to do, or is it more murals?
I do enjoy them. I've really come to find with graphic design, I love that I can really incorporate a lot of hand rendered imagery and designs into graphic design. So even now, there's a website that I'm working to build, and there are a lot of whimsical, almost hand rendered designs that I have incorporated into the background alone of the website. And so that I really enjoy that and doing all of those things. And even there have been some logos I have been able to create for some clients, and majority of them are hand rendered. And I think that's more, that has become my niche. Like I will just design it on my iPad and then just pop it into Illustrator and vectorize it. And so it still holds onto that kind of hand drawn essence. But you know, you can resize it or you can do whatever you want with it. But I think coming out from my schooling, that's where I do see myself going. That's kind of the path, the niche that I see myself going into, more hand rendered graphic design, imagery and designs that way.
Why did you go to graphic design school? Like, what was the purpose? Like, what was the original intent of it?
I did have an interest in websites and doing just digital art, because I was doing some digital art. I wanted to go into schooling for it just to gain more knowledge and to understand more what I was doing, because I had Adobe Suite, and I was just like, I was so limited because I didn't really know what all the tools were. I knew maybe like three of the tools. So I wasn't using it to the maximum potential that I could. And it was actually my husband's aunt that one day we were meeting with her for lunch, and she asked me what I wanted to do. And I was like, I don't know. And she's like, well, what about graphic design? And to be honest, before, I never considered graphic design because I I was very ignorant to the just how diverse it is. Mm-hmm. And I just always thought that it was just typography. And I was like, mm-hmm. I don't know anything about that. And so when I kind of looked more into it, and I was researching some schools, and I was reading through their curriculums and stuff, and I was reading some stuff, and I was like, this is really, actually really interesting. I would be interested in this. And I think the biggest selling point for, because I went to Fleming, the biggest mm-hmm. selling point at the time was this illustration course, because I was like, oh, I could do illustration. Like, I'd love to illustrate children's books. Like, that's so fun to me. That, like, interests me. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was it. I went in with the intent of becoming an illustrator and doing mm-hmm. illustrations for children's books or just for whatever. And then I came out of it and I was like, I like logos and I like designing websites. I don't know. I came to find these things about myself after going through the program. So, and it's been very beneficial to me. You like graphic design, go for it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think that's exciting. And I really like the approach as an artist and then backing it up with school and sort of like, you played around with things, you want to learn more, dive into it, see how you can apply in different places. I think that's also a good case study for why you go to a technical school like that versus people who maybe go in and are like, don't really know anything about those things and are like, well, I just want to go to this program and I'm going to get a job as a full-time graphic designer and like, that will be it. But really, you know, it's a method that helps you maybe professionalize your artistry and, you know, be able to channel it in different ways versus hoping for like the golden ticket of that. Because with graphic design, like you're always, it's project based. So it's like you only make money on your next project.
Type
of thing. So yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, even in my program, there's, and I think this goes with any schooling. You know, you have the people who've come back. Me as a mature mm-hmm. student coming back, I'm very intentional with what I'm learning and really absorbing what is being taught. And you have, I think, other students that are still figuring what they want to do, and you know, about halfway through, they're like, "This isn't what I want." And so, like, you know, there's a lot of that, and like I said, this can be in anywhere, any school, and you have people don't know what to expect when they go in there, and then they're just very discouraged, I would say. They come in with, I think, assumptions, like coming in, I want to be a great graphic designer, but, you know, sometimes with graphic design, you do have to do these really random little things that, like, I don't add that to my portfolio, but I did it, it's fine, it's just... You know, it was a extra grocery money. Like, it's, you know, and I've had some conversations with some people who, even right now during the season where a lot of the students are looking for internships. So there are a lot of people that are very particular and very picky with where they're applying, because they're like, I don't want to do this. Like, I don't want to get into that. I want to avoid corporate. I want to do more artsy things. And like, you can't really do that. And now I'm seeing it here on the other side. I'm like, I can't, like, I would love to do artsy things, but sometimes you just have to do the corporate things. You have to kind of do it all.
Find where you can make money.
Like. Yeah. Yeah. And not only that, but that, all of that pours back into you and your experience. And like, you may not like doing corporate, but if you're good at it, then that's something you can always offer someone. You never know what someone, you know, you come across someone that they're looking for something. It'd be a sad thing that to pass up on an opportunity just because you didn't like it. Take everything as an opportunity that comes your way.
The classic artist struggle of not wanting to make money for their art, right?
Yeah.
Just kind of feeling guilty about it.
But, which I think is such a modern thing. This is, we had a long podcast already, but I was thinking over the weekend about the timelessness of art. Mm-hmm. And humans always love surrounding themselves with nice things, that being an artist has always been a trade. If you look at, you know, people saw they dug up like some tiles from like a field in Britain, and it used to be like a Roman tiled floor, and it's like some artist painted all of those tiles and someone laid them, and that sort of like core task is part of every community probably forever. So it changes and adjusts and finds a way, but you know, you don't always just get to work on the things that only you like.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes you are, you know, painting tiles for people, or you're doing those things that, you know, help make it a business. And you channel your own work, but you know, then it gives you the freedom and creativity to play around with some of your own stuff.
Yeah.
Real business owners will pivot though too. Like when I started Magic Digital, I thought I was only going to do this that way, right? And then I realized, oh, maybe this isn't the best fit. So now I'm over here. And then, like, you keep just moving along and kind of going with what makes sense. And yeah. I originally wanted to be everything for everyone. And then I realized you can't really make a lot of money that way. Slash, you will just be running around the hamster wheel forever.
Yeah.
And, like, realizing, okay, now this is where I want to be. And I learned years ago not to say, well, this is how it's going to be. This finite thing, maybe it's going to change in a year, right? Like, you need to keep adapting and being open to those things. It's good that you've got that mindset already.
Yeah. And the nice thing about it too is that, like you said, when you finally adapt to that, you know, the one or the two things that you become really proficient in, that's what that's value that's added to your brand and your company. And then from there, like, people are willing to pay because they know what you are capable of. And even with, like, you know, with art, it's very easy to just take up, like, you know, to do everything. But when murals, like, I know the value that murals have in homes. And so, you know, it's, people are willing to pay for that. They're willing to pay for that. So really, I mean, the whole starving artist thing, it's, you know, that was a short period of time. And now artists are finally figuring out how to market themselves, how to be a business person and really monetize yourself. And because there's, people are willing to pay for art. You just have to find them.
I love that. That's a great final thought. what's sort of one thing you want people to know about your business and what you do, and how do people find you?
Yeah, well, with, you know, with the murals, I'm always very flexible, and, you know, I acknowledge that there's budgets and sometimes finances get in the way, but I'm always very flexible, and I always want to accommodate for anyone and everyone. Doesn't matter what the art is. I will never turn down an art, and like a mural. So if you want a mural, if you want Kermit the Frog, I will paint that. I mean, yeah, so probably have limitations when I come to it. But yeah, but you can find me on Facebook and Instagram. On Facebook, my name's Jess Spagnolo Art. I think you can fly. Is all this information going to be on? No, they probably can't find it.
I'll link stuff in the show.
Links,
notes.
Okay. My name can be hard to spell, but it's it'd be JessSpagnolo. Spagnolo.
As soon as you pronounce it, I was like, Brian, that's wrong. It's Spagnolo. It's just the whitest pronunciation ever. Now I know the difference.
It's the GN, the Italian GN. The G is kind of silent, like lasagna.
Spagnolo.
So it's like the end kind of rolls over into the Spagnolo. But yeah, and on social media, I am jspag.art. And yeah, my website is jxss.co. Like a bunch of different things. But just Spagnolo art. You can like Google me. I'll come up on the Lindsay Advocate and stuff.
That's awesome.
Local artist or whatever. I don't know how they have me titled.
I think they call it upfronts, don't they?
Is that what it's called?
I think so.
I don't know.
Goodness.
Awesome.
I've been local man a couple times.
Thank you so much for being here. This was great.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Matt, what's the one thing you want people to know and how do they find you?
I'm going to burn my promotion by shouting out Jess's husband. What's his name?
Andrew Archibald.
Friend of the show, fan of the show, right?
Yes.
He is the reason why you came. So shout out, Andrew. Thank you so much for forcing your wife to come here and become part of the Thrive community. It's been awesome to get to know you a little bit. It was funny when you call yourself an extrovert. I never actually thought that. You're like very just quiet.
Really?
Yeah. Anyways, but thanks to Andrew for getting her to come and check out the show and come to Thrive.
I'm not going to tell him that you said that. I'm just going to have him discover this shout out on his own when he's listening to the podcast.
Does he know you're going to be on it?
He knows.
Is he losing his mind?
He's excited. He's quietly excited.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's exciting.
Or go to madgdigital.com.
All right. That sounds good. All right. You can find me at profitcoach.ca. Matt and I love to help you collaborate, to help you start, grow, or recharge your business. We want to work with you. If you want to discuss working with us or be a guest on the podcast, send us an email to setitup@kawarthasmallbusinesspodcast.ca. And remember, we believe that Kawartha's can be the most thriving region in Canada for small businesses.